Good morning, one and all. Welcome to Vision in Action Live. We have a presentation and a discussion today with our guest, Joe Dennis, Senior Partner at Jockman Dennis in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where he delivers evidence-based solutions to organizations and individuals that improve their performance. Welcome on board, Joe. I'm Jim Boswell. I'm your host and the author of Lifelong Fulfillment. Take charge of your life. Today's presentation is going to be on happiness and fulfillment, foundation concepts in the pursuit of a life well lived. So, happiness and fulfillment are often confused because they're used interchangeably in everyday conversation when they actually focus on different objectives and results. Happiness is a more emotion-based response and is distinguished by taker and receiver roles. Fulfillment, on the other hand, is more of a self-directed achievement process that targets personal development and creates satisfaction, and as a consequence of that, happiness. Let's look into it further. This is Maslow's hierarchy of needs, showing everything from the physiological clear up through self-actualization, and it's portrayed as a triangle with a large base and a very small top. As you look at this, once you've satisfied physiological and safety needs, you get into love and belonging and esteem categories. And arbitrarily, this is pretty much where happiness begins to play. You're not yet at the point where you're making self-determined steps and goals and achieving those. But you're pretty happy with your circumstances, with your family, with your job, with the esteem you have, the respect of others, and so forth. If, however, any of those things goes awry down in the safety and psychological, you have to go back down to those basic things and resolve those until you can return to esteem and love and belonging, which define happiness. So it's a dynamic pyramid that all of us walk up and down multiple times. Above happiness, you get into the beginning of self-actualization, where you're setting goals for yourself, possibly for your immediate family. You're working to solve those, you're resolving problems, and you're achieving fulfillment, self-actualization. At the very peak of that is what's called the psychologically rich lifestyle. This is more of a new concept. And it has to do with those people that are already at fulfillment levels, but they're interested in pushing the envelope around different perspectives, different lifestyles, and things like that. Their goal is to develop some wisdom. Let's take a look further on how that happens. So let's do our definitions first. Happiness, as defined by professionals and the Psychology Association, really has to do with feelings of joy and contentment, other positive emotions, and a sense that one's life is meaningful and valued. Miss Dr. Lubomirski of the How of Happiness says that happiness energizes us and is highly sought after state, and generally that seems to be a true thing. If you look at psychology today, their definition is very similar. It's a positive emotional experience. It is really rooted in emotion as opposed to just thought. Happiness is a state of well-being. It encompasses the good life and it gives some meaning and deep contentment. And the American Psychological Association concurs with joy, gladness, satisfaction, and well-being. So that's happiness. Let's take a look at fulfillment as a counterpoint. So fulfillment is really about felt and actual satisfaction of needs and desires, the attainment of aspirations. It's the very definition of self-actualization. So this is when a person is meeting their goals and being self-realization or achieving self-realization. And it's different for each and every individual. We all don't think the same, although we may think naively that we are all the same. Key components to fulfillment Resources you need, yes. Support, yes, that's nice. It revolves also around your character and your element of curiosity and the quality of life that you're looking to lead. Some of the goals of it have to do with being free from regret, achieving that self-development, and possibly even leaving a legacy. And the sources of fulfillment revolve around relationships, your occupation, how you savor life, recreational activities that you value, and perhaps even spirituality. So let's look at how fulfillment works, since in the lifelong fulfillment venue, we want to talk about how that works. About 50% of life's outcomes are due simply to genetics. We don't control that. That's a gift from our parents. 10% happens to be about life circumstances in general. So that leaves about 40% of the outcomes for an individual that can be affected by intentional endeavors. This comes out of UC Berkeley studies. If we go back to Maslow's hierarchy, I'd like to remind you that once you achieve enough at any level, you actually reach a diminishing point of returns at that level unless you start having goals at a higher level. And when you see overindulgence and extravagance, that's frequently the case. You've reached that level, more is better if you think that way, and you wind up overindulging a bit. This is when satisfaction has actually already peaked at that level. And if money's part of the equation, it's much less significant at that point. On the flip side, Lululemon Learning would have us believe that most people think that unemployment and the death of the spouse are significant detriments to satisfaction on the order of 45 to 50%. The interesting thing is the same survey looked at marriage, and the plus side of satisfaction is only about 10% for that. Let's look at what those would be defined as for those of us who live it every day. So positive experiences could be a promotion, a new eye toy of some type, maybe a vacation, probably a new car, and time with one's children and friends. All of this in balance. Negative experiences, which most of us try to avoid, come from comparing oneself to one's neighbors, a fight, a loss, playing catch up, working longer hours, old age, depression, and disease. These are kind of out of balance conditions. And these we can't all avoid, so they're part of living. Income set and satisfaction are actually positively correlated until enough is achieved. You don't want to overdo it, but they're correlated directly. And they're especially important to younger people early in life, further down at the base of Maslow's hierarchy, as they move from survival conditions to enough. They want to be happy also. And the interesting thing is the overall greatest satisfaction is achieved by those that are 16 to 22 years old, and those people in their 60s, moving up to 70. This is out of the Brookings Institute. Another thing to think about is we do this by comparison. So we have to say, ideal life for whom? Everybody decides this individually, and in countries, it turns out that it's quite different. The kind of orange block is for happiness. These people were allowed to choose any kind of descriptions they want about what the ideal life might be. If you look at the USA, number 10 on the list is happiness. In India, it's number 2. In Angola, it's number 7. In Japan, it's not even in the top 10. So, if you look at the USA, you could say, well, some of those things that are 1 through 9 clearly are fulfillment. Some of them are just happiness. But we seem to be more generically achievement oriented. If you look at India, it doesn't look like that happens to be the case. If you look like Japan, it does look like it happens to be the case there. And in Angola, it's not exactly clear. So who you are, where you grow up, certainly has an influence on you. So don't disregard that. Those of us in the USA, you kind of know how the generic populace stacks up. Let's take a look at some more things. So lifelong fulfillment is focused on self-fulfillment in all its dimensions. And I want to point out to you that you can't be a specialist in one and really do well with what you want to achieve in life if you don't have basic grounding in other disciplines. But what fulfillment does is it delivers happiness as a byproduct. So let's go back and say, can we be fulfilled if we're just happy? Well, the answer is kind of not realistically. But if you're doing lifelong fulfillment, you probably are going to be happy as a byproduct. Fulfillment also helps because it serves as a bulwark against circumstance, life's inevitable difficulties, and losses of personal control and self-determination. Lifelong fulfillment doesn't rely on chance or fate. Happiness can, you can be mostly a recipient in that role and be perfectly comfortable with it. But in fulfillment, it actually relies on what one does on one's own behalf. There's more to say about this. I recommend that you go to YouTube with Emily Smith and check out There's More to Life Than Being Happy. It's a pretty good podcast and it goes into more detail. Now we'll adjourn to our guest today, Joe Dennis. And this is the time in Vision in Action Live when we share the perspectives of people leading directed lives. Today we have as our guest Joe Dennis, senior partner of Giacomini Dennis. Thanks for joining us, Joe. Welcome to Vision in Action Live.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
That's great. So, Joe, you and I have talked before, and I wanted to say that it can't have been very easy for you to have become a partner in Giacomini Dennis and do the advisory to organizations that you, in fact, do. Can you maybe share with us what led you into that practice, what you do, and how is it going?
Well, I'll back up a little bit and give you my career so that you can see where I am today. I was in banking for 10 years. I worked for Xerox Corporation for 20 years. And they weren't mad at me, and I wasn't mad at them, but I didn't need to know it anymore. And so I went into exploring taking the knowledge that I gained from Xerox and forming a consulting company in what I do now, which is Giacomini Dennis Group, is work with organizations on understanding how the thought patterns inside the organization that they have influence and direct the attention of performance. So it's all about change. And the biggest thing that seems to come up from one company to the other is how difficult it is to have their folks change. They have a meeting on Friday, and on Monday morning, they're supposed to start the new direction, and they go right back to where they were. And so that's where I come in, and I begin to explain to them how you create change in the organization is changing the self-image of the organization individually, and you got to give them tools. So what I offer is tools to understanding the quality of your thinking has a direct relationship to the performance of the organization.
Okay. So can you give me us an example of maybe what one of those tools might be?
Sure. Give you a very good example. Human beings are born goal setters. We naturally, instinctively set goals, but we normally set them within a limitation of how we see ourselves. And if I see myself as only being good enough to perform at this level, or only good enough to interview for this job and not a job above that, my self-image will hold me back because of the way I talk to myself. And we talk to ourselves using three-dimensional words. A three-dimensional approach: words, pictures, and emotion. And so the words we use trigger a picture of the way it will be, and then we glue it with emotion. So the amount of emotion that I apply individually, what you apply individually, Jim, determines whether or not we're really driven to do this. So when you decided and created this wonderful platform to create podcasts for folks, what you've done is you've raised expectations, but you may be talking to someone that hasn't raised their expectation. And so they stay flat and they don't grow. We have unlimited potential, but we don't release it. And so what I do is explain to them how to release that potential by carefully understanding how you choose the words, because the things that you say to you is how you're going to live your life.
Okay, so how you speak it is as important as what you believe or reflects what you believe. Am I getting that right?
You're right on. That's exactly right. So even though I say these words out loud, I have to think them in my mind.
Right. I know that in brainstorming sessions that companies run and organizations do, they often encounter that because they kind of prejudge their capability and their neighbor's capability, and they kind of, limit the amount of good ideas and the enthusiasm that can come to bear. So, yeah, it's and for, I wouldn't call it a human failing, but it's certainly a human characteristic.
Yeah, and it can get in our way and it can cause us to stay in place. And we won't let ourselves want something if we don't think we can cause it to happen. So if a company is performing at this level, but they know there's more potential out there, they won't let themselves want it if they don't think they can get it, even though they know it's out there. And
And so,
it's all going to be guided by the way we instruct ourselves. For example, let me ask you a question. Do you talk to yourself?
yeah, I have a pretty big internal voice.
Okay.
Yes, I do talk to myself.
Yeah, and so do I. And we're born to talk to ourselves because that's how we give ourselves instructions. Now, what we have to do is pay attention to the instructions we're giving us. Because
Right.
if it's limiting, then we'll hold ourselves back and we won't even try to accomplish or achieve things that were possible. We just didn't believe it.
Right. Okay. So, does this process have roots in anything formal? You said mentioned Xerox, and I know they were pretty big on training, like a lot of corporations in the 80s and 90s and whatnot. Does it come from some body of expertise, or is this stuff that you've
No,
developed on your
no,
own?
no. What I'm referring to is when I left Xerox, I joined the Pacific Institute, which was founded by Lou Tice.
Ah.
Lou is deceased now. He and Diane Tice founded the Pacific Institute in 1971. And it's based on cognitive psychology. And it's
I see.
rooted in the foundation of the word efficacy comes up an awful lot. And self-efficacy, we know the word efficacy when it relates to products, like that's an efficacious product that does what it says it's going to do. But Albert Bandura, and I had the good fortune, Dr. Bandura of Stanford University, I had the good fortune of working with him as a in a group for 2 weeks at two different times. And he's kind of the father of self-efficacy. And self-efficacy is your appraisal of being able to cause and make something happen. So you could have high efficacy or you could have low efficacy. And so if my low efficacy traits, like right now, I would say I would have a low efficacy, I would have low efficacy in flying an airplane,
Right.
but I have high efficacy and riding a bicycle.
Okay, I'm with you.
So now, if I don't want to fly an airplane, I won't let myself do it.
Right, but you could change that equation if you went to pilot school.
That's exactly right. If I wanted to. So the key is how much want of that emotion are you going to give yourself to go out and do it? Because you only perform at the level of your belief, not at the level of your potential.
Okay. I'm not sure everybody believes that or knows that, shall we say.
Yeah.
So
Well,
maybe
think
you want to
about it.
repeat that.
Say again.
Maybe you want to repeat that. Everybody performs at.
Their level of belief, not at their level of potential.
Okay.
So I currently have a belief system that I can't do something, but I have the potential of doing it if I choose to develop the skills to cause it to happen.
Right. And so that's what you bring to organizations and individuals is breaking that down to believing in a better you, it sounds like.
Well, we actually show you how the mind works, so that you can pay attention to where you are in your thought process. So, if you in the simplistic approach of looking at it with a conscious mind, subconscious mind, and then what we call the creative subconscious mind, the conscious mind perceives, associates, evaluates, and decides. So that's what you're doing as you listen to me. You're perceiving what I'm saying. You're associating it. And you're evaluating. And then you're deciding whether or not you're going to buy into it or no, I don't buy into it. And then your subconscious mind is your library. And that library holds all your life's experiences forever. So in the third grade, if I had a teacher that put me up front of the class, and which is true, put me up front of the class and wanted me to teach multiplication, and I didn't even understand arithmetic. And then she started laughing, and then the kids started laughing because she's a figure of authority. My self-image said, I'll never do that again. I'll never get up in front of a group of people where they might laugh at me. Well, I had to overcome that. And so my way of overcoming it was through athletics. So I developed a self-image of being a high performer in Division One. I had Division One scholarships in baseball and football, and then I got hurt. If I hadn't had some outlet, I could have sat at the back of that class forever. Because nobody wants to listen to me. And I had to change that belief because that was my self-image. Nobody listens to anything I have to say. And if they do, they're going to laugh at me. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir. It does, in fact. It
Yeah.
does.
And I actually held that belief for 35 years, Jim.
Wow.
So when I was 35 years old is when I started changing it.
Yeah.
I only went out far enough that I felt it was safe. That's why I
Right.
said we don't operate at our level of potential. We operate at our level of belief.
Right.
I had the potential to do it when I was 35, but my belief system wasn't going to allow me to do it.
So, changing midlife like that. Sounds like it was very important for you. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here talking together, I presume.
Well, it was very important. Lou Tice was a wonderful mentor. And if you have an opportunity, there's several books he's written, but one is on self-talk. And we build our life around self-talk. The things that we say to ourselves and the things that we say to others impact the way we live our lives. And so when you really get that clear in your mind and understand how important it is for you to pay attention to the way you think and the way you talk,
Right.
creates the life you're going to live.
Well, thanks. That's very good advice for folks, Joe. I appreciate you sharing that with us. Ed, for consulting work, if I can call it that, maybe you could relay to us some of, one, an instance of maybe your most significant challenges.
Well, I'll give you one challenge that I faced growing up is I have dyslexia. And so with that, back in the day, I'm 77 years old, and back in the day, they didn't understand dyslexia. So they thought that my behavior was I wasn't paying attention. I was disruptive. But the whole thing had to do with I didn't understand. I couldn't see the words. I couldn't see the numbers in the order that they were coming out. So I was really challenged by that. And so my whole self-image had to be redefined by being able to do something, and that's where athletics came in. Now, having said that, when I worked with organizations, I discovered later on I wasn't the only one in the world that had dyslexia.
No.
And so inside the organization, there was a lot of folks that were pushing back and didn't understand why they were pushing back in their role within the organization. And so as we went through that, I began to show them how to grow, how to change. And the method that you do is you do it all the way, all the time, Jim. You've written affirmations, I'm sure.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, the first thing that comes up when you talk to people about affirmations is that it's kind of a foo-foo thing. And I've never written affirmations. I don't write affirmations. But the idea of understanding how important it is that you think in affirmations. And if you break down the word affirmation, what's the root word of affirmation?
No.
Affirm.
Right.
And then what's the root word of affirm? Firm. So you firm up whatever it is that you believe that may or may not be working in your favor. So if the idea is I'm not very good at this, that could be inside of an organization and they can discover that they've got potential, but their belief is I'm not very good at this. And so they won't let themselves even try.
Right.
And so
Yeah,
when
that's
they
interesting.
understand, I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
So when they understand that it's important to pay attention to the way you give yourself instructions, because your self-talk is the way you'll live your life, and the self-talk of the individual is collective within the organization. So when I'm working with organizations and I'm talking to them about the performance and their goals and what they need to accomplish and what kind of budgets they're hearing they don't have enough money. I always we don't have enough money, we don't have enough time. That's always
Right.
what they say when
Constraints driven. Yeah.
And lo and behold, when we peel that back a little bit, what we discover is that that's a belief system. They want performance to go up, but they don't want to change the performance. And to change the performance, you have to be accountable individually. And so as we began to explain to them that you won't let yourself want what you don't think you can cause to happen, then you'll hold yourself back, miss the opportunity.
Exactly. Exactly.
And what we're after is tapping into our unlimited potential. And potential is what we're not using.
Right.
We could, but we're not using. And once you
Right.
understand that you've got more that you can offer, then you start doing the basics, which is pay attention to the way you instruct. So if you say, I will, you want to be careful about that because I will is a future tense. I will do this. So you throw it into the future and you put it off, and
Right.
then it never happens. So you want to talk in first person present tense and come from a place that you're talking in ideals, creating the ideal picture the way you want it to be.
Yeah.
Once that's created, then you can work off of that. And you don't need to know how you're going to accomplish the goal. You need to set the goal and you'll invent the how.
Right. That's kind of the process that lifelong fulfillment recommends. Very similar in terms of not prejudging things, but letting everybody's mind go to what's the end result that I want to achieve, and then figure out how to build up to that, you know?
And that's what you did, Jim, when you put together your book and you take life and you want to fulfill it, you look at what those barriers are that are in front of you,
Right.
and you make that choice. Do I want to
Yeah.
go over this? Do I want to go into that cave?
And
Is there
take a
something,
risk. Yeah.
yeah, is there something inside that cave that won't let me out? Or is there really a way that I can go inside that cave, and what an adventure it would be? So, I think when people take a minute and look at what you've accomplished in your life and made it more fulfilling by overcoming obstacles and setbacks and discovering them at different places in your life is really key to what anyone can do. What we're talking about, anyone can do. It's whether or not they want to do it.
Exactly. Well, thank you, Joe. This has been a good conversation, and we really appreciate your insights here. At this time, I think we're going to wrap up the conversation. And thanks again for coming to Vision in Action Live and joining us. I'm sure the audience got a lot out of it. Thanks
My
again.
pleasure. Best to you, Jim.
Same to you, Joe. Thank you very much.
All right.
And that's our podcast for the day today. Thanks, guests, for joining us. Vision in Action Live podcasts are about every 2 weeks, and they'll be announced in advance. Thanks for tuning in. And please do avail yourself the opportunity to check out the book, Lifelong Fulfillment, other collateral materials, and this podcast on lifelongfulfillment.com. Thanks very much. Have a great day.